Friends, this podcast was sponsored by the Flow Living Hormone Center at flowliving.com, your one-stop concierge for your period where you can test, track, treat, and talk about putting your period issues into remission naturally from anywhere in the world. And the MyFlow app, which you can find at myflowtracker.com, which is the only cycle syncing app that lets you use your hormones to master your life. And by the Balance Supplement Period Box. Whether you're on the pill or not, your hormones need specific micronutrients to stay healthy. Balance by Flow Living is the first and only supplement subscription box to biohack your period. Sounds pretty good to us. Want to learn more dope things about your body? Don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Cycles and Sex. Thanks for listening.
She looks fabulous. Her arms are tumbling like Michelle Obama. Give it up right now for Kimberly.
Thank you. Thank you.
This is so exciting to have this conversation. And that was a great introduction. I appreciate it. I bring you greetings from New York City. So I'm loving the sunshine. Loving the sunshine. So today we're going to talk about race and reproduction, which is a very important conversation, a very important intersection, and really think about how these two worlds have come together and what the implications are, both in my work and for women in general. So these are my babies, right? And the truth is that when I had my first child, I was an unwed black woman. And so I had just completed my master's degree at Columbia, and I had walked down the aisle proudly with my baby. But weeks prior when I delivered her, I felt the experience of being an unwed black woman, right? And that when I got to the hospital, I often say that hospital gown is a great equalizer. Nobody asked about my career. Nobody asked if I had just completed my master's degree. I felt the experience of being an unwed black woman, right? And so that was very interesting for me because I wasn't prepared for that. Because we know that these issues impact the care that women are receiving in the hospital and their experience in birth and in breastfeeding, right? And so why is this the case? Because for years, our reproductive abilities haven't been valued, particularly as black women. Is a very complicated history, right? And so procreation for us is not as simple as a choice. And certainly when you add the complexities of what is considered illegitimate childbearing, oh my goodness, right? So that makes it even more complicated. So what do we know? We know that race and reproduction are inextricably linked. We know that these two are together and that we cannot have a conversation about one without having a conversation about the other. And that's really, really important. And for us, particularly when it comes to women of color, this goes as far back into history. Because what do we know? We know that during slavery, black women, their bodies were valued according to their ability to breed and or to feed, right? So there was literally a market created for black women based on their ability to have babies and feed them. Now, the value, the economic value was that we were able to produce more sources of labor and then our value as feeders because white women had decided that they didn't want to breastfeed their children. That was beneath them. And so throughout history, they have paid black and brown women to do that work for them. And so many black women were stopped, particularly during slavery, from breastfeeding their own children to breastfeed the children of the white slave owners because the slave owners knew the value of the milk. But what does that mean? We're missing a slide. Okay, let's go back. Okay. But what does that mean for these women who really had this disrupted, traumatic experience, right? Because if you know anything about birth or breastfeeding, you know that it's not just about the food, like there's nurturance involved. And if I think about breastfeeding my son, I can literally give myself goosebumps, right? Here they come, right? Because of that feeling. And none of us can imagine being forced to provide that to somebody else's child, your oppressor's child, and to see your own children die from neglect. And so, but this has really been the history of what has happened to black women's bodies and their reproductive powers. That reproductive ability was only valued from an economic perspective, but that woman was really seen as an object, right? Not seen as a full human who would be allowed to actually own her child, right? An enslaved woman could not own her child. That child could be taken away from her at any time, right? So at the end of slavery, our bodies had no economic value, right? And then our children became valueless as well because they served no purpose. And somehow the story got changed that black women, their bodies were a problem and their children were even worse of a problem, right? If you read any historical records, if you read some of the political papers that came out, black women were blamed for all societal ills, particularly single mothers, right? And that their children were viewed as potential criminals, you know, rapists, robbers, you name it, but certainly not children who are valued. And so if you look historically over whose fertility has been supported and whose fertility has been suppressed, we know where women of color have fallen into place. And so throughout history, this control looked different in different forms, right? So we know that throughout the years, the government was even involved in a federally funded sterilization programs. These programs continued through the 1960s and 1970s. Many of these women had no idea what they were consenting to, right? But the government itself was involved with forced sterilization. And interestingly, California led the country. So California led the country in number of sterilization procedures performed. 20,000 sterilizations were performed in California, which represented one-third of the total of all the 32 states that this was happening, right? So when we're thinking about the impact, when we're thinking about whose reproductive organs are valued and whose are not, right? Now, while this was happening, there is and continues to be a booming business to support the fertility of white women with money, right? At the same time, while they have been trying to sterilize and control the bodies of women of color, right? And so we cannot have these conversations about reproductive rights without understanding the history of whose rights have been allowed and whose have been suppressed and controlled. It's really, really important. And so in addition to the forced sterilization, what do we see now? We see a big push to really, with these Depo-Provera shots, right? Many women of low-income women are being pressured to have this Depo shot before they even leave the hospital. In some places, it can be a condition for receiving services. But the stories, I travel the country a lot. I actually just got back from Australia as well, where they're telling the same story about low-income women being pressured to have this shot before they leave the hospital, right? And so we're seeing this idea, again, of whose fertility is respected and whose fertility is controlled and need to be suppressed as a growing phenomenon, particularly around low-income populations, women of color, all across the world, right? So this idea continues. And even though it may not be a government-funded sterilization program, it is happening in a systemic way across the country. And so even though black women weren't valued as procreators, they were certainly valued as caretakers, right? That's what they were valued as, women who could take care of other people's children. I live in New York City. I attended NYU for undergrad, and it used to really blow my mind to see all the women of color who were pushing strollers with white babies as their caretakers, right? And what is very troubling about this, you know, that's important work, right? But somehow the media has convinced us that black women are desirable and capable for taking care of other people's children, but somehow incapable of taking care of our own, right? And so that's the dangerous lie that's been told about black women and women of color, and that is impacting what's happening. It's impacting the care that they receive, right? It impacts what happens when you show up at the hospital to give birth. And so we hear these stories all the time that women of color feel constantly disrespected, right? They feel constantly that their voices are not being heard. I think about how many times I had to ask them and tell them to bring my baby to me because I wanted to nurse her, and they just would not listen at all, right? I work in New York City in hospitals, and we have literally have to advocate for women because their voices are not being heard about their own bodies. How disrespectful. Right? How disrespectful. But if you have not been viewed as a quote-unquote good mother, then you are not afforded the decency of being allowed to advocate for your own body, to make decisions about your own family planning, and to be viewed as an important decision maker in a process that ultimately impacts you. Right? And so we understand that this is really an ongoing problem, and we cannot continue to have reproductive rights conversations in simplistic terms without understanding what that looks like for different populations, particularly among women of color. So we know that not only did we take care of the children, we breastfed the children often to the detriment of our own. We talked about that, right? We raised other people's children all the time. But we also know that this history of dehumanizing black women's bodies and women of color's bodies is also seen in our birth outcomes, right? Right now, to this day, even college-educated black women are twice as likely to have a low birth weight baby, three times more likely to die during childbirth. Now, in the white community, education and income will protect you from poor birth outcomes. But in the black community, it does not, right? And this scared the crap out of me when I became pregnant, because I was blessed to have been educated and blessed to have not been poor, but that was no protection. I am still at the same statistical risk as my disadvantaged sisters, right? More frighteningly, nobody can really tell us why. Nobody can really tell us why. Now, there's some really interesting theories about the impact of racism and stress, right? And that, I'm not talking about the stress that you can bubble bath away or we can handle with a glass of Shiraz, right? Because that's important. But we're talking about a lifetime of stress. And what now these medical journals and sociologists and doctors are realizing is that enduring a lifetime of stress weathers your body. It's called the weathering effect. And so that black women actually enter pregnancy in a compromised health state, which impacts what happens to them during prenatal. So even women who go to all the prenatal visits, because they used to say that about us, that we didn't go to the doctor prenatally, right? But you can't reverse years of weathering and racism on your body in 9 months. Not going to happen. Despite your best efforts, I don't care how much salmon you eat, right? So we have to understand that what we're talking about is a real problem, and that racism is real and it's impacting birth outcomes for women. And so we see that not only is there a racial disparity in birth outcomes, but there's also a racial disparity in breastfeeding. For over 40 years, the rates of breastfeeding among black women have been at least 50% less than those of white women, right? And there's all types of theories of why that is, but the truth of the matter is we go back to understanding who gets support and who does not, right? We understand that nurses and doctors, are time-strapped, and sometimes they have to make flash decisions about who's going to get support and who isn't. And if you're sitting there trying to make a snap decision and you have a black woman who you've told is not going to breastfeed, and you have this lovely white woman who you think will breastfeed, who's going to get your time? Happens all the time. It happens all the time. Also, we know in this country that breasts have been hypersexualized, right? We use breasts to sell chicken wings and beer, but if anybody sees anyone nursing their baby, they're uncomfortable, right? Because breasts belong to men, not to infants, people. Not to infants, right? And so if we think about the breast being sexualized, we know that black bodies have been hypersexualized. And that idea of a black woman breastfeeding has become even a more provocative flashpoint in our world. And so these things matter, right? And then we know that the black maternal mortality rate is ridiculous, right? Do you see this number? 12% for white women, 42% for black women, right? Birth is literally killing us. And if you don't think that's another form of reproductive control, then you need to think about that another way, right? Birth is literally killing black women. And so right now, so in Texas, which is the worst state to live in, and don't think that's going to improve the next 4 years, but whatever. Black women accounted for 11% of all births, but 28.8% of all deaths. Are you kidding me? And so we see that there's been an outcry about this crisis, that black women are dying in birth. Now, much of the death is related to hemorrhaging, bleeding out, which is related to C-sections, and C-sections are often about control, right? I've had 2 C-sections, and I don't even know why, right? I had to just let it go, leave it to Jesus, because for years it troubled me, you know, as a relatively resourced person, why no one bothered to explain to me in ways that I could repeat and understand why I had to be cut open to have my children who were full term. I had no issues, complication-free pregnancy, but ended up having 2 C-sections, right? And many times that is not about what's best for our babies. It's often about what's best for that doctor, how much time you've been there. They don't want to wait. They've got an appointment for golf that's more important, right? And so they've got to keep you moving. And we also know whenever there are medical interventions, there's more money to be made, right? Birthing our babies, as they say, naturally, doesn't bring in the anesthesiologists, the drugs, all those extra things that you get to charge for. And so when we look at who's the highest C-section rate is upon, it's also upon women of color who, again, have had that control asserted over their bodies. And so these issues are layered, but the outcome is the same. More black women are dying, more black infants are dying. And so when we can't continue to have a simplistic conversation about reproductive rights, because we have often used this language of choice, but we can't ignore that choices are within choices, right? Nobody's choice exists in a vacuum. And even with thinking about access to abortion, a very important right, but that's dependent on your access to transportation. Can you pay for one, right? So even that choice is impacted by other choices. So we can't assume that every choice is just a choice for everybody. Some people have choices within choices, right? So we've had this awareness that we can't just go around saying, hey, it's great that you have this choice without really understanding what that means for everybody. And that not everybody is even allowed to exercise those choices freely as others, right? We know that's really important. So I wanted to just share very briefly as I wrap up something directly from my book, because, you know, when we think about choice, particularly as womanists, feminists, whatever we're calling ourselves these days, I have all the t-shirts, that we really have to think about this from not from a simplistic way of thinking that all choices are the same for everybody. So I want just to share this, this directly from my book with you, because it's really, really key to us kind of unraveling what's been happening with reproductive rights and health disparities, right? This is dangerous thinking when the reality is that our choice has more limitations than many think, and choices based on uninformed decisions founded on marketing propaganda is not true choice at all. It's particularly dangerous because we fail to differentiate between those who have the privilege of choosing and those who do not. And it avoids any analysis of how race, class, and power actually affect a woman's choice. If breastfeeding is purely a personal choice, it need not have anything to do with greedy corporations, body politics, or a marketing industry that has sold women damaging messages. If breastfeeding is purely a personal choice, then we don't have to connect the dots between the paltry breastfeeding rates in these countries and high levels of childhood allergies, asthma, type 2 diabetes, and obesity, right? All of these things have health implications, even how you birth your babies. So the dialogue around real issues that could significantly affect our lives, our health, and the health of all of us has been suffocated while we clamor behind choice and use it as a shield. Our ability to build conversation and support among ourselves has been stifled because we won't discuss what we have been told is a private matter. And so we really have to re-examine how we really blow the lid off of this conversation for all of us. And to say this is not a conversation just for women of color. This is a conversation for all women to speak up. And not as allies, that's a great word, but I love the idea of co-liberation, right? Like, our futures are inextricably linked, and your freedom is my freedom, and my freedom is your freedom. And until all of us are free, none of us are free, right? Right? Okay. Anyone have anything you want to share? Yes. three action points. I think my biggest action point is for all of us to start reframing reproductive rights and what that means to different people. I feel really powerful that we are speaking out about a lot of things right now as women, and that things that used to be taboo topics that we're saying, no, we're actually going to talk about that. We are, right? And that's been running the gamut from sexual harassment to we're here talking about our periods and our menstruation cycles. Hello, right? So this is the time for us to raise our voice, but to also make sure that we are understanding how these conversations fall for different people. And so what we need from our white co-liberators is that, you know, they are also engaged in a conversation about race and understanding that talking about choices is important, but there are other things that impact women's ability to actually access those choices. And if we could all bring that back to our conversations, whether we're having that conversation at Thanksgiving dinner or in our workplaces or in our advocacy efforts, I think that would be so huge for us to do that. Yes. So one of the things that's really big in my work, and I've run community projects in the Southeast and in Detroit and Philadelphia, and I have one mantra for that work, and that is, whatever the question, the answer is in the community, right? And so often we've been looking to scientific journal, evidence-based research, and I'm like, evidence-based on whom? Well, whatever, and other places, instead of asking the community. So the best thing we can do is actually be in community. Now, to be in community means you have to feel comfortable going into the community. So you might have to do a little self-work. But the idea is that we're not going to solve this problem up here. It's not going to be solved up here. It involves us really digging, getting back into the trenches and getting that community knowledge and asking those women, what would it take, right? What would it take? What do you need to make this happen for you? And if we trust them as the actual people who have the solution, not the people that we need to save, but the people who actually have solutions for the problems that we're all committed to, then a whole new conversation can open up that's really more inclusive of all and allows us to really get some answers that could actually work because they've actually come from the people that we're looking to work with. So, that is one of the biggest things that I've been talking about. I also feel very strongly that as women, we have to create a new language around reproductive rights. I feel reproductive rights has been mostly about not getting pregnant or ending an unwanted pregnancy. That is absolutely very important. But what about if you actually want to have a baby, right? And you need to feed it, right? So it has to include all the procreative activities. And what happens is, how can we build a women's movement that only looks at a woman's role when she doesn't want to use her reproductive organs and offers her nothing when she chooses to? That's not a reproductive rights movement, people, right? And studies show us to say like 80% of women will become mothers at some point in their lives. So we're not building a movement that looks at all the roles and identities a woman will play at some point in her life. Then we're not building a real women's movement. We're just building something for some. Right? And so we really have to change our language around what it takes to support women through their life continuum, through all the roles and identities they play, caretaker being one of them, whether that is for your children or for your parents. We will all likely be there at some point, right? And so we have to have support through all these, through our life continuum, and not just focus a movement on just one area when you don't want to use something that you may want to use later, and then there's nothing for you. And if we look at how institutional racism, we talked a little bit about what that looked like in the past. I mean, the government was using black people for studies, right? Like, you know, Tuskegee experiment, Henrietta Lacks, so many examples of people of color. We could spend a whole day on the Native Americans. You know, the government has been involved with using people of color for science, not to better understand them, right? They're trying to build their scientific data off their backs, not trying to better understand their health conditions. And so what we really need is more community-grown efforts to better understand us. I mean, I feel very strongly that, you know, nobody's going to understand us better than we ourselves. It's like women, right? They think they understand us, but they don't, right? And we're complicated. So, you know, how can we actually create knowledge that comes from the community? Because we can't always rely on the government to do it for us. And so how do we create a new kind of genre of knowledge that's actually from the community, experiential knowledge? That's very valuable. Your lived experience, that is profound in understanding how we can change things. So I'm hopeful that more programs and activities will be looking to capture that, and that will help us provide the foundation for a new framework for reducing disparities. But, you know, we can't ignore what has happened in the past. Historically, that includes everything from, you know, the way our neighborhoods are segregated to access to education to really food options, right? We were going around saying to people, hey, you should eat well and exercise, which sounded good, but how many millions of people can't even easily access a banana? So it was this messaging that was simplistic and good to the ear, but completely disconnected to the reality of so many people's lives. And so we can't continue that. And I'm hopeful that by us having a more kind of rooted knowledge that we can do something about these disparities, because it needs to stop. Yeah, thank you.
Hi, friends. Just a reminder that we need to give big props to Elisa Vitti of the Flow Living Hormone Center at flowliving.com, MyFlow app, MyFlowTracker.com, and Balance by Flow, the Balance Supplement Period Box, for sponsoring these podcasts. So check out her work, and don't forget to follow us on Instagram @cyclesandsex to learn more dope things about your body.